5 to 9 on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
To Coast AM. And now, filling in for Art Bell, here's George Norrie.
Now, don't try guessing where I'm broadcasting from tonight. I told you I'm in a mystical place. Gotten about 62 emails already. People guessing, thinking that I'm out of the country, that I'm in the kingdom of Nye, that I'm somewhere. I'm not going to tell you. If you want to email me, though, you just go to Art Bell's website, artbell.com. You click on Interact. Email host, scroll right down, and there I am. In just a moment, I'll continue what I believe is an incredibly fascinating discussion with Michael Cremo in the hidden history of the human race. How would you like to melt away? Literally melt away excess body fat and trim those unwanted inches without strict dieting or strenuous exercise, and it is possible with Ultimate Slim. It's the all-natural, scientifically designed formula to metabolize your fat into energy. Ultimate Slim helps block carbohydrates, fat absorption, reduce sugar cravings, and lose water weight. And within minutes, you'll feel more energetic without the nervous side effects. Within days, you'll start losing inches, your clothes will be looser, and within weeks, your waist will be thinner, and you'll be ready for the holidays. I recommend Ultimate Slim because it's perfect if you want a lean, sexy body, but you just don't have time for a lot of calorie counting or these long, sweaty workouts. Just ask Will, if you can, my board operator. He has lost 60 pounds and more now with Ultimate Slim. So what are you waiting for? Burn fat the quick and easy way with Ultimate Slim. Order 2 bottles of Ultimate Slim, and you know what? You'll get 2 more absolutely free. That's 50% off. Plus, you'll also receive the Healthy Eating Guide and Cookbook, which is a $20 value, absolutely free as well. So call now at 1-800-557-4627. This is not available in stores. Ultimate Slim is guaranteed to work or your money back. 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627.
Hey, investors, would you like to double your investment returns? Today, world tensions, rising oil prices, and stock market uncertainty have more people turning to gold to protect and grow their savings and retirement accounts. Reports are absolutely everywhere. Forbes, CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, even Merrill Lynch all say big money is moving to gold. And that's why gold investments have outperformed all stock funds in 2001. That's why I have Lear Financial manage my own gold investments. As a satisfied client, I encourage you to call Lear Financial at 1-800-474-4259. See how you too can protect and grow your own savings and retirement account. If you call 1-800-474-4259 right now and mention the Art Bell Show, you're also going to get Lear's audio seminar titled Why the Experts Picked Gold in 2002, a $29 value. The guide and the tape are free, but the offer is limited. So call 1-800-474-4259 now. That's 1-800-474-4259.
Michael, these little steel spheres that we were talking about before the break, how big are they?
Well, they're not made of steel. They're made of a type of iron called hematite. But they're about 1 or 2 inches in diameter. And the really interesting feature of them is the parallel grooves that go around the center of each of them. You know, the groove, some of them have 2, 3, or even 4 of these grooves, some only 1. But as I was mentioning beforehand, metallurgists who've examined them say they can see no way in which they could have formed naturally in the layers of the earth. They had to have been manufactured artificially somehow.
What would they be used for?
Well, that's very interesting. A lot of people have made proposals. I think they're some kind of game piece. That's what I think they are. Because I've been to a lot of archaeology museums around the world, and I was in one in Hungary, and I saw some objects that resembled these, and the archaeologists had identified them as game pieces. But that may not be the whole story with these things. Of course, these come from a mine in Africa, and there's one of them that I put a photograph in Forbidden Archaeology. It's got three parallel grooves going around the center. And this one was in a museum in Klerksdorp, South Africa, in the Museum of Natural History there. And they're the ones who sent me the picture of it. And the director of the museum, Dr. Rolf Clark, said... Well, this is interesting. There were other reports that this object would spontaneously rotate in its display case. In other words, nothing would be touching it, and it would move.
Now, that's an incredible story.
That is really interesting. Now after my book was published, a television producer from Holland, from Amsterdam, called me up, and he said, I want to go down... to film that object down in South Africa. So I put him in touch. I mean, we want to, put him in touch with Rolf Marx, the director of the Museum of Natural History down
yes.
there in Klerksdorp. But Marx wrote back to me, and he said the object had been stolen from the museum by a person he characterized as a, quote, white witch. So these objects may have other properties. I hope whoever's got it now is putting it to good use.
Did anybody try to cut into it or to saw through it?
Yes. I brought a specimen a couple of years ago. I spoke at a MUFON, Mutual UFO Network lecture series that was held in New Hampshire. I believe it was in Portsmouth, I think.
Was it one of their annual conferences?
Yeah, it was one of their annual conferences, and I showed the object there, and a couple of engineers from MUFON wanted it, so I gave it to them. And they did saw it in half, and one of them, he reported back to me that he measured very carefully from the center out to the edge, in other words, the radius of it. And he said the radius of it, if you measured the radius in all the different directions from the center out to the edge, after you've sawed it in half, and you've got you mark the center, and then you measure out to the edge. In every single direction, he said the radius varied by less than 1/4,000th of an inch. And he thought that was a very high tolerance.
Absolutely. I thought for a moment you were going to tell me there was a little man inside when they cut it open.
Maybe we haven't looked at all of them, but he thought that was pretty interesting. And they haven't been sawed in half. They have been measured. There's more research, I'm sure, that could be done with them. To say examine their electromagnetic properties and things like that. They do appear to be manufactured by someone with human-like intelligence. Now, maybe somebody would say, well, maybe they were, but they don't really belong in the layers of rock in which they were found. Somehow they went down through a fissure or something. But I don't think that that's possible, because I went to Cape Town, South Africa, after I spoke at the World Archaeological Congress, and I met with the chief mining engineer from that mine. And he's a very responsible gentleman, and he showed me a block of the mineral with these objects, round objects, solidly embedded. Some of them were half sticking out, and you could see the grooves that went, you could see the grooves, they disappeared around back into the solid rock. So they are solidly embedded in this mineral, which is over 2 billion years old. So we brought this up because you were kind of asking about it, but those are the oldest objects that I found, and they do go back about 2 billion years, which is about what I would expect.
Well, how do we know it's not expended fuel from maybe a ship of some
kind? Somebody, you know, there was one engineer, nuclear engineer, wrote to me and suggested they might have be expended nuclear fuel pellets from the shape of them. But they're not, from the analyses that I've seen, you know, I got back from the, when these things were shown, before they were shown on the NBC television special, The Mysterious Origins of Man, they were analyzed by metallurgists, an independent company of metallurgists. And I got the report from them. And they did an analysis, you know, of the mineral content of the things. And they weren't made of anything that would that we would say would be a radioactive element. The material was mostly hematite with some manganese and other trace elements in there. But I don't know. To me, they're a puzzle. And I would just invite anybody who wants to go down there and get some samples and investigate them. I think there's much more work that can be done on them.
Absolutely. Let's talk about a few other things, Michael, here. I can't believe how quickly the night is going. The sunken city off the coast of India. Tell me what you know about that area.
Well, that's very interesting. Last year, the government of India announced that some of their oceanographic teams that were doing surveys off the northwestern coast of India, the Gulf of Cambay, had discovered remains of a city about 50 kilometers off the coast or something, if I remember correctly. And at first, when the oceanographers had first announced this, started talking about this privately to other scientists, including some of their Western colleagues, they were very skeptical. They thought, well, perhaps these could just be natural formations. Because what they had done is they were doing sonar mapping of the ocean bottom at that place. And their sonar mappings had turned up regular rectangular shapes, you know, along both sides of an ancient sunken riverbed. Because what's happened over the past 20 or 30,000 years is the ocean levels have been rising. So that means places all over the world, including America, that were once above land are now underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's places, the continental shelves of the United States, they would, if you had come here thousands of years ago, they would be above water. Now they're underwater. So that's been going on all over the world. And in this particular place, a river had been flowing out there, and now the riverbed is underwater. But on both sides of the riverbank, going for several miles on either side, they had found these rectangular structures that appeared to be like architectural forms. Now, sometimes, you know, scientists will say, well, it just looks like that. So what they did, what the Indian oceanographers did, is they went out there, and it's not a place you can dive because the ocean currents are very strong. The ocean currents have stirred up the bottom so that you can't see.
Is it murky down there?
It's very murky and very swift currents down there. But what they did is they dredged. They put down some dredges and they brought up. And what they brought up, they found some human bones. They found semi-precious stone jewelry. And they found other human artifacts, pieces of pottery, and things like that, all indicating that actually it was a city. And they found that among the things they dragged up was a wooden object, a piece of wood. And they did some radiocarbon dating on that, and it turned out to be 9,000 years old. Now, of course, this doesn't relate to my other field of interest, which is the origin of the human species. You know, the origin of the human species, say, according to today's orthodox scientists, goes back about 100,000 years.
Right.
So that's why I'm interested in any evidence of a human presence that goes back hundreds of thousands, millions of years. But I'm also interested in the history of civilization. And according to the standard accounts, you don't have any signs of civilization anywhere in the world. By civilization, we mean organized cities. The oldest one they had before that was, I think, Jericho in the Middle East, which goes back about 7,000 or 8,000 years. And then after that, you know, you have other settlements in the Middle East that go back about 5,000 or 6,000
sure.
years.
The which same is Egypt, Sumeria, I guess,
right,
which
like
is
that.
Part of Iraq, yeah.
So if this city really is 9,000 years old, you know, as the initial radiocarbon dates indicated, that would be quite interesting because it would be the oldest city in the world. And it would also change their whole picture of the history of civilization in India.
Do you think it could be a magnificent structure?
Well, it would be several magnificent structures because, as I said, you've got many architectural shapes, some of them quite big, going on both sides of a river for a couple of miles. So it's not that they just found one thing. It's like they found a whole city.
Right.
Now, I think this is... It also could possibly change their ideas about Indian history. This is a question that's been debated for about 200 years now, because when the first Europeans went to India to colonize it and take it over back in the 18th and 19th centuries, of course, they weren't the first. I mean, the Europeans had been going there since the time of the Portuguese explorers and the Romans. But I'm talking about the time when the Europeans went to actually colonize the place and take over the whole place, as the British did.
Could this be Atlantis, though, Michael?
That is a possibility. There are many descriptions of where Atlantis is. I mean, if you look at the literature on Atlantis, there are authors who say it's off the coast of Cuba. There's authors who say it's off the Bahamas. There are authors who say it's in the Atlantic Ocean. There are authors who say it's in the North Sea. But if we just mean in general, the idea, it all depends what we mean by Atlantis. If we just mean in general the idea that in the past there were cities there with advanced culture that were once above water but went under the water, I would say, yeah, you could call it an Atlantis.
And there could be there are lots of them then.
Well, if we interpret it that way.
Yes.
It seemed like Plato, that's where we get our information about the specific Atlantis that he was talking about. He seemed to describe it as being due west of Gibraltar, you know, the Gates of Hercules, you know, the entrance to the Mediterranean Sea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So whether something that's in the complete opposite direction would qualify as Atlantis, the one that Plato was speaking about, I'm not so sure. But if we mean, as the term has come to mean in the minds of many, some advanced civilization that existed in the past that went under the water and is no longer there with us, then, yeah, you could say it like that.
What about the possibilities, Michael, of two things? One, that we were visited millions and millions of years ago, that maybe if we'll call them humans for now, for lack of a better word, that they were 10 million years old, maybe they were indeed people from another planet that came here, so that biologically they didn't evolve here. Or as Zachariah Sitchin, and I know you know his works, talks about crossbreeding between extraterrestrials and those that were on this planet. Is that a possibility?
Yes, if I understand his views correctly, they go something like this, that I think, if I understand him correctly, he accepts pretty much the standard view that scientists have about the evolution of life on this planet, that, you know, between 2 and 3 billion years ago, life self-organized in Earth's early oceans and then formed one-celled creatures and then came multi-celled creatures, and some of them went onto the land and became plants and animals there, and some of them became monkeys, and gradually the process of evolution led up through the various ape men, like Homo erectus, to about 200,000 or 300,000 years ago. And then at that point, particular point in time, there was some visitation by extraterrestrials, and at that point, as a result of that visitation and some genetic manipulations and things like that, our modern human species evolved. That, for various reasons, I don't agree with. And normally, if anybody reads my books, I mean, you see, I don't criticize other researchers.
No, you don't. You know, you lay out your facts.
I lay out mine. I let people, they can read my book, they can read his book, they can read somebody else's. But if somebody directly asks me a question, what can I do?
I do want to read real quickly, though, the front the cover of The Hidden History of the Human Race, because a lot of people know this name, and I'm going to read this because I think it's important. One of the landmark intellectual achievements of the late 20th century, and that's from Graham Hancock, the author of Fingerprints of the Gods. So I just wanted to get that in there.
Yes, I've met Graham and his wife, and we've had some quite an interesting time as they were on their way out to do some diving and do some photographing for some of their books that they've published. But so that idea that I think, first of all, he starts out from the standpoint of the Sumerian writings, and I start out from the standpoint of the Vedic writings, and there's a difference there, because in the Vedic writings,
there is. There's a big
about the human presence going far back in time. I think we do have some things in common. We do accept that. I think the things that I would have in common with Zachariah Sitchin would, I do believe, yes, there are humanoid species scattered throughout the universe on different planetary systems. I do believe that we have been visited by them. I do believe there's been crossbreeding. But I would say, on the basis of the ancient Sanskrit writings and the physical evidence that's been discovered by scientists, the human presence on this planet goes far back in time,
much more
than 200,000 or 300,000 years.
And that's a long time. Much more to come with my guest, Michael Cremo, on Coast to Coast AM.
Here's WHAM's radar weather for Rochester and Western New York. Partly to mostly cloudy, mild and breezy for the overnight. The low 63 to 68. Could be a quick spotty shower on the west side. And then during the day on Wednesday, still on the warm, breezy side, clouds will limit the sun dull. There'll be a period of showers, even a thunderstorm in spots. Wednesday's high 75 to 80. Thursday, noticeably cooler and breezy with morning gray skies breaking for sunshine. Thursday's high 63 to 68. This is WHAM's Kevin Williams.
And we keep hearing from the left that they have a First Amendment right to speak their mind, which they most certainly do.
Michael Savage.
So when you hear one of these left-wing ninnies saying, oh, I said this, and it's protected, how dare you say to me that it's repugnant? Well, because you are a repugnant, wimpy, left-wing, commie red from hell, and you ought to be thrown off campus, and you ought to lose your job, and you should have your tenure strip.
Michael Savage.
And you don't like it? Let him shut his mouth and salute the flag.
Weeknight at 8 on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
You're love has grown stronger day by day, year by year, which is why you have chosen to give her a whirlwind safari adventure.
Does this mean we need to get shots?
Okay. What about... Your love has grown stronger day by day, year by year, which is why you have chosen to give her an exotic sports car.
Is 505 cubic inches a good thing?
All right. Your love has grown stronger day by day, year by year, which is why you have chosen to give her a Hearts on Fire diamond.
Wow.
Hearts on Fire, always cut to the most exacting standards in the world for a beauty that is all but impossible to ignore. Hearts on Fire, the world's most perfectly cut diamond.
This is David Cornell. I've been in the jewelry business my entire life, and I have never seen another diamond that can compare to Hearts on Fire. Before you give a diamond to someone that you love, come experience the Hearts on Fire diamond exclusively at Cornell's Jewelers, 3100 Monroe Avenue.
An important fiscal message from County Executive Jack Doyle.
When I was first elected, I promised the community that I would never balance the burden of county government on the backs of taxpayers. We all know the economy took a downturn, causing stress on family and government budgets. But during these difficult times, I commit to you that I will follow through on my pledge to hold down your taxes. That's why I've introduced a tax stability plan that makes some tough choices, but it balances our county budget without raising taxes. A property tax increase would destroy the dreams of young families trying to buy a first home, parents saving for their children's education, and seniors who want to pass on what they work so hard to earn. We must reform county government to do more with less, protecting taxpayers while maintaining vital services, like public safety. We can get through this short-term crisis. We will share the pain of government reductions together, but we will survive without raising your taxes.
Paid for by the Monroe County Republican Committee.
Coast to Coast AM, driven by Bob Johnson Chevrolet.
Welcome to the Mengel Metzger Bar and Company Business Minute. Here's Tom Chevetta.
Constructing, expanding, or purchasing a new building is an exciting but expensive step for your company. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find a way to put a significant amount of cash back in your pocket? Traditionally, construction costs are written off over a period of close to 40 years. But with a cost segregation study performed by the professionals at Mengel Metzger Bar & Company, many components could qualify for shorter federal and state tax lives. By writing off these specific costs over a shorter period of time, significant tax dollars can be saved. Let Mengel Metzger Bar & Company help put cash in your pocket now and accelerate the tax deductions you receive tomorrow.
Call 423-1860 or go online to MengelMetzgerBar.com. Mengel Metzger Bar & Company, locally based, globally connected, providing services beyond accounting and tax.
Morals, values, ethics, and principles. It's Dr. Laura, 9 till 11 on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Be it sight, sound, smell, or touch, there's something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch, or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak with roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hold and to use them to help.
Coast to Coast AM. And now, filling in for Art Bell, here's George Norrie.
To have modern human beings appearing a great deal earlier, in fact, at a time when even simple primates did not exist as possible ancestors, would be devastating not only to the accepted pattern, it would be devastating to the whole theory of evolution, which has been pretty robust up until now. That's from William Howells, a physical anthropologist, as he writes about the hidden history of the human race with my guest tonight, Michael Cremo. The After Dark newsletter talks about Bigfoot, aliens, paranormal, but also talks about weather, the quickening. It's just a remarkable newsletter, one that I think you need to have. After Dark is what it's called. It's part of Coast to Coast. Here's the toll-free number, 1-888-727-5505. You can order it today or tomorrow, whenever you want. After Dark, 1-888-727-5505. On the program last night, somebody was saying, there's something big up there. I can see it. I don't know what it is. But I think it's a spaceship. It's the biggest object in the sky at night. I thought it was the planet Venus, and I got about 16 emails today from people who said, yep, you're right on. It is the planet Venus. That's what it is. And they probably saw the planet with their telescopes, the Hardin Optical Company telescopes, which they have now three telescopes. They call them the Deep Space Hunters. 6-inch Deep Space Hunter, 8-inch and 10-inch. The prices vary. Depends on your budget. The 6-inch, for example, is only $299. The 8 is $399. The 10-inch is $599, plus shipping and handling. They're in stock right now. That's the good news, and available for immediate shipping. So if you make your order, they can get it out to you real quickly. Each comes with two eyepieces, an improved focuser, and even a new base with a tray to hold those eyepieces. Hardin Optical, they seem to do it time and time again. Why don't you call 1-800-394-3307 at any time to place your order, 1-800-394-3307, or you can see all the Deep Space Hunters if you want to go to the web at 4, F-O-R, ForTheNightSky.com.
Have you thought about trying Viagra, but you don't want to talk about it with your family doctor? Maybe it's just too inconvenient, too much of a hassle, or just kind of embarrassing. Well, now you can order Viagra over the phone for as little as $6 per dose. That's right, the real Viagra, made by Pfizer, not an herbal substitute, for less than $6 per standard 50-milligram dose. You can order it over the phone. Call Lifestyle Pharmaceutical Products right now. 800-407-6252. It's just minutes over the phone. They'll ask you a few confidential questions pertaining to your health. Your medical information will be reviewed by a physician, and upon the doctor's approval, your Viagra will be shipped discreetly right to your door. Don't put it off a minute longer. It's easy, it's convenient, and it's completely confidential. You'll save time and money, too. 800-407-6252. That's 800-407-6252. Order Viagra over the phone. 800-407-6252.
Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Michael, in forbidden archaeology specifically, have you ever come across anything that would show the possibility of a past nuclear explosion, something like that that occurred, that glass remnants of that kind of a blast?
There have been some reports of things like that from India. We were talking a little bit earlier about, say, what these ancient Sanskrit writings talk about. I mentioned vimanas, or spacecraft, as one high-tech object that is mentioned in these writings. Another that's mentioned is something called the Brahmastra. And if you read the descriptions of the effects of this particular weapon, it's a weapon that was used in ancient warfare. It's described that it's blazing like the sun. As a matter of fact, some of the first scientists who were present, like Robert Oppenheimer, who were present when the first atomic bomb was set off at Alamogordo, New Mexico, quoted verses from the ancient Sanskrit writings to describe what they saw. Oppenheimer, who was one of the first scientists,
sure,
who was working making nuclear weapons, he was also a student of Sanskrit. So when the bomb went off, he quoted Sanskrit verses to describe it. Now, I have encountered reports that in northern India, at a place called Kurukshetra, which is one of the ancient battlefields, there are places like this that have this glass. You have parts of the landscape there that are covered with this fused sand, which could only be done at a very, very high temperature, like that which would take place when an atomic weapon is exploded directly above. Now, the problem with some of these reports is that if you try to get back to the original sources or try to find out the exact location, you can't do it.
Well,
I didn't mention that in Forbidden Archaeology, because I don't just put anything in my books. I try to, so the reports are there, but I have not been able to verify them at this point. Now, there may be other places like that.
Would an asteroid explosion impact have created the same kind of glass look?
Usually that would make a crater of some kind there. You do find when asteroids or meteors come down, sometimes they make they do make glass, but it tends to turn into little round balls that are scattered around. I think they're called tektites, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a different sort of thing, as far as I can understand. They do make glassy substance, but it's not in exactly the same form as you'd get from just the energy blast from a nuclear weapon, as far as I know. I could be wrong about that, but that's the information that I have at the present time, and I'm happy to be corrected if I'm wrong. But as I said, they're interesting reports, and I've got a whole file of such things that I try to verify to some extent, if I can. And the particular report that I had started circulating a few years ago, but it mentioned the names of some scientists who were supposedly reporting this, but I haven't been able to track any of them down to get some more exact information about exactly where this fused glass is, the fused glass area.
Okay.
So if anybody knows about that, if any of the people out there who are listening know they could get onto your site, as you were suggesting earlier, and then link to my site, drop off the information for me.
Okay, that would be great. And if it pops in tonight and you have an opportunity to see it, let me know. Or if they email me, Michael, tonight, I'll let you know that as well. What about the possibilities? This is a little far-fetched here,
But the main point is I would expect to find such things, because I do believe that these types of weapons were there and they were used. But go ahead.
And they may have been used from above as well, It's possible that there might have been that kind of a war from extraterrestrials.
I believe that's also possible, yes.
What about the possibilities that we are accidental time travelers and that all of us have somehow found ourselves in the future now from something that, had occurred a long time ago? And maybe indeed there were massive cities and tremendous intelligence, and we have been to the moon, we've been to Mars, and maybe we've come back to Mars, and that for some reason we are merely a product of some kind of time travel. I mean,
that's a very interesting question. If you get into the actual scientific discussion of the possibility of time travel, you'll see there's several different opinions about it. Some will say that it would have to involve some kind of tunneling, going through a black hole or something, and that the energies would just rip up any type of human being that attempted to do this. So, and then others say, well, maybe it is possible. So I think even Stephen Hawking and others have addressed this question. I think he tends to think it's not possible. And others say, well, maybe it is. So it's a question that cosmologists, astrophysicists are discussing, whether it's possible. And again, it's one of these areas where as a human being, I'm willing to take information from all sources. Now, from the information that I get from the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, I'm inclined to believe that future time travel is possible, that you can skip time. And this is something I think that Einstein would agree with as well. There's one story in the ancient Sanskrit writings that there was a king named Kakudmi living on this planet. And he had a daughter, Revati, and he was searching for a good husband for her. So he decided, let me go up through the different dimensions to the planet of Brahma, who's, according to the ancient Sanskrit writings, is the chief demigod in this planet, in this universe. So he journeyed up there with his daughter, and he was told, okay, Brahma is listening to some music now at a concert. He'll be with you in a few minutes. So he waited for a few minutes. Brahma came, and the king started asking him about different princes and kings who are on the earth who might be a suitable husband for his daughter. And Brahma was laughing. And he asked, well, why are you laughing? And Brahma told him, well, in the time that you've been up here, the few minutes you've been here, millions and millions of years have passed on earth. And so when he went back down, millions of years had passed on earth. So you could call that a kind of future time travel.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think something like that is possible, that we could have. It is possible to jump forward in time. Whether one can jump backwards, that's another question. There is something, a mystic power in the ancient Sanskrit writings called Trikalagya. It means one can know past, present, future. I think it might be possible for someone to gain knowledge of everything that's happened in the past and everything that's happening now and everything that's happening in the future. As far as going back into the past, I'm not certain about that. I think that's less of a possibility. But as I said, these are scientific discussions that are going on now among some of the greatest astrophysicists and cosmologists in the world, and they have different opinions about it. And if you want to know my opinion, future travel is possible. Time travel in the past isn't.
Why do they call these ancient Sanskrits? Are they written on, like, tablets of sand? Is that what it is? Or?
No, the word is actually, maybe I missed, haven't been pronouncing it quite clearly enough, but it's the word is Sanskrit, S-A-N-S-K-R-I-T,
Skrid.
Not with a D in it, so yeah, I apologize for not pronouncing it correctly.
All right, but perhaps. Even that, why do they use
Sanskrit
that word?
Sanskrit, it's simply a word, it means perfect. And actually, there have been computer programmers who've said that Sanskrit would make a perfect language for computers. Because our English language, it's really messed up in one sense. You have similar spellings that are pronounced in completely different ways, like rough, though, through. You've got O-U-G-H in all of them. It's pronounced differently in every single case. Whereas in Sanskrit, each letter, it has a particular pronunciation. It has a particular meaning, and you can actually construct a language on it that you could program in a computer, whereas in English it's very difficult to do that. So it's anyways, that's why it was called Sanskrit. It means because it's a perfected type of language.
How old are those writings?
Well, now, one thing about writings is themselves, they don't last very long because we may have manuscripts, but they were constantly recopied, so that after one manuscript wears out, you copy it, get rid of the old one, and go on and on like that. But so the oldest manuscripts that they have go back, I think, about 1,500 years or 1,000 years. But the literature itself is much, much older. And according to the writings themselves, it's been around since the very beginning of the universe, really. So you can't even put a figure on it in terms of years, according to the tradition itself. So that's something I'm interested in. I'm interested in finding older and older documentation of the language. That's something I'm interested in doing, and I've got some research projects in mind in India, to do that.
What do you think it's going to take, Michael, to have your thoughts, your theories, the things you believe in, to really bust through for people to say, my gosh, he's right?
Well, first of all, most people already do believe what I believe. Say, like the theory of evolution, for example. There have been studies that have been done that show in the United States, for example, about 50% of the people believe that God created the human beings and we didn't evolve from the apes. There's another 30% who believe that, well, maybe we did come from the apes somehow, but God did it. God evolved us that way. There's only about 10% of the people in the United States that actually accept the Darwinian theory of evolution as it's taught, by the Darwinists in the universities. So 90% of the people are already on my side to one extent or another. If we look at the whole world, one thing I would like to point out is that the evidence that I report forbidden archaeology means we need a new explanation for human origins. And I think that explanation is going to have to involve the paranormal. It's going to have to involve extraterrestrials. It's going to have to involve all of these things. It's going to have to involve defining the human being as not simply a combination of atoms, but a combination of mind, matter, and spirit. So if we look at the world's population today, I would say three-quarters of the world already agrees with that. So to me, it's not a question that I have to convince a lot of people. Most people are already convinced of these things. The problem is that you have a very influential, dominant sort of group of people that has somehow or other hijacked, you could say, the world civilization. And I think they're actually performing a kind of what I would call intellectual terrorism, really, to frighten people into accepting their ideas or not protesting against them. And so I think it's that group of people, this group of people that has somehow or other managed to hijack, the world's educational system. That's who I'm really directing my attention at. Because most of the people in the world, even in the United States, they already accept these things. They already accept the existence of extraterrestrials. They already accept the idea that there's a soul, that there's a God, that we didn't evolve from the apes. Most people already accept that.
Well, let me give you an example, yeah. Michael. This is a strange example, but we have heard for years that our government gave Saddam Hussein biologicals. We've known that for years. Nobody's confirmed it with us. It's just something we've always heard. Just yesterday, the CDC confirmed in reports and papers that an agency that supplies samples of biologicals did ship anthrax, West Nile virus, in botulism-type biologicals to Iraq in the 1980s. Now it confirms a rumor we've always believed in and we've always heard. And I think the same is case in a strange way with what you're talking about. I think we all know what you're talking about is true. And one day, my gosh, I think the world is going to understand it and say, Michael Cremo was right. And I think that's going to happen, Michael.
Well, not just me, because I'm not alone in this. I mean, there's people like yourself who are giving an avenue of communication for researchers like myself. But I'm not the only person who's working in this area. I'm sure you've got many other people who are working along these same lines. And what I would say is that we're in the midst of something now on this planet of ours, which I would call a major renegotiation of our whole picture of reality. And it's something that happens maybe once every few centuries, almost like a pole shift or something.
Mm-hmm.
What you might call an intellectual pole shift. And I think we're about due for it, because most of the people in the world are already on our side. That's a fact. But you have certain dominant institutions where the orthodox, official, materialistic scientists have gotten a lot of influence in the mainstream media, mainstream political circles. They've been able to get a lock on the education system, for example, in the United States.
Stay with us, Michael Cremo. I'm George Norrie. We've got lots more to come, exclusively and worldwide, on Coast to Coast AM.
WHAM and Preferred Care, welcome America's most respected news anchor to Rochester. You've heard him on Wham for decades. Now you have the chance to see him live. Paul Harvey in Rochester at the Eastman School of Music's Eastman Theater, Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m. Tickets on sale today at noon at Ticket Express or charge by phone.
232-1900.
Paul Harvey, live in Rochester, Thursday, November 14th, presented by Preferred Care at News Radio 1180, WHAM.
Here's Randy Farnsworth, president of the Randall Farnsworth Automotive Group, talking about his positive business dealings with WHAM Radio.
We find at the Randall Farnsworth Auto Group, radio is an extremely effective media source to use. And what we really found is that working with a radio station like WHAM, a total team effort is used to exceed our expectations. At the Randall Farnsworth Auto Group, I can't express with any more emotion how important radio is in our media mix. WHAM and their team does a quality job to support our efforts to make sure people not only know where Canandaigua is, but come to Canandaigua to look and buy GM vehicles. WHAM and their entire team, I want to say thank you, because without you, our business wouldn't have grown over the last 3 years consistently in double-digit numbers.
To improve your business, call WHAM General Sales Manager Dan Guilfoyle at 454-4884, extension 117. Wham gets results.
This isn't about the rest of the world. This is about us. It's our World Trade Center that was attacked and blown up. It's 3,000 Americans who are now dead that weren't dead a little over a year ago. It's us that we're talking about protecting. All we need is us behind the gun. All we needed behind the gun for the Soviet Union was us, and it worked. And we ain't dealing with the Soviet Union here, folks. Not yet.
Rush Limbaugh, weekdays 2 till 5 on News Radio 1180. WHAM. Watch it later. Read about it tomorrow. Hear it now. News Radio 1180. WHAM Rochester.
A clear channel radio station.
CBS News. I'm Jim Chenevy. Its name is Lily, and it could pose a big threat to the Gulf Coast tomorrow.
Hurricane Lily is growing stronger each hour, and we're looking at a major hurricane now with high sustained winds of 105 miles per hour.
CBS News meteorologist George Cullen.
Lily is moving pretty rapidly, about 16 miles an hour. And this storm could be a strong Category 3 or even a 4 hurricane when it makes landfall.
Highest probability of landfall right now is Louisiana or Texas coast.
Devin Scott of CBS radio affiliate WWL reports from New Orleans.
Emergency officials across Metro New Orleans are keeping a very close eye on the Gulf, watching Hurricane Lily's movements very carefully.
The news, ladies and gentlemen, right now is that Lily is a very serious storm. It's forecast to be a Category 3 hurricane when it approaches the Louisiana coast.
Jefferson Parish Emergency Management Director Walter Maestri says, like many officials in Greater New Orleans, they're taking a wait-and-see attitude toward evacuations. Many residents are still cleaning up debris left just 1 week ago from Tropical Storm Isidore. Devin Scott for CBS News, New Orleans.
Retired three-term New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg is the Democrats' choice to replace Robert Torricelli on the November ballot if the state Supreme Court will relax a deadline for such ballot changes. CBS News legal consultant Andrew Cohen.
The Democrats are offering the New Jersey Supreme Court plenty of other upcoming deadlines to focus upon, aside from the 51-day deadline the party already has missed. The gist of their argument is that the deadline is a technicality that even the county election clerks haven't paid much attention to. Now, the Republican lawyers say that the deadline is black-letter law, and it was designed to prevent precisely this sort of chaos close to an election.
President Bush and a bipartisan group of senators will meet today to look for common ground on a resolution against Iraq. Correspondent Bob Fuss.
This morning's meeting comes as negotiations continue to find wording of an Iraq resolution that can get a big bipartisan vote. That, says Senate Leader Tom Daschle, would be best for everyone.
What kind of show of strength do we want to demonstrate? And if the administration will work with us, I think that we can demonstrate a very significant show of strength.
But so far, the White House has resisted efforts to put some restrictions on authority for a war against Iraq and put more emphasis on being part of a wider UN action. Bob, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Today's negotiations between the Pacific Maritime Association and its locked-out Longshoremen's Union has been canceled one day after the union walked out of federally mediated talks when the PMA team showed up with armed security guards. Union spokesman Jim Espinoza.
We stand responsible. We're ready to go to work. This is total irresponsibility on their part, and thug tactics will not work with this union.
The PMA's Tom Edwards.
Initially, we kept the ports open despite disruptions. We reopened the ports after a cooling off period, and the result was an escalation of the union's strike action.
This is CBS News.
If you're trying to lose weight, then grab your pen and paper, because now you can try Carbolife Gold for free. That's right. The makers of Carbolife are giving away free trial packs to everyone who calls right now. You heard right. Everyone who calls right now can get a free trial pack of Carbolife Gold. You want to lose weight for free? You got it. Carbolife Gold has become Chicago's favorite weight loss supplement. In fact, Linda from Aurora lost 42 pounds. Cindy from Crystal Lake lost 61 pounds. Tina from Elmwood Park lost over 80 pounds and keeps it off with Carbolife Gold. Now it's your turn. Don't delay. If you're serious about wanting to lose weight, now's your chance to do it for free. Get your free two-week trial pack of Carbolife Gold by calling now. This offer is not available in stores, and the supplies are limited.
Call 1-800-689-1752. That's 1-800-689-1752. Burn the fat now with your free two-week trial pack of Carbolife Gold. Call now. 1-800-689-1752. 1-800-689-1752.
Federal prosecutors set to announce criminal charges against the man suspected of cooking the books at Enron. Stephanie Lambadakis reports.
Prosecutors are expected to file a variety of fraud charges against Andrew Fastow, the former chief financial officer, whom, according to his chief lieutenant and now chief accuser, Michael Copper, was behind the secret partnerships that made the insiders millions of dollars. While the government has telegraphed some of its case against Fastow in court documents, prosecutors are going to lay out the clearest picture to date of the alleged fraud that brought down the company.
An assistant to Martha Stewart's stockbroker has reportedly reached a plea deal with prosecutors and will testify against her and others in the M-Clone insider trading scandal. 26-year-old Douglas Fanuel is expected to plead guilty to a misdemeanor count of making false statements to investigators. Stewart sold nearly 4,000 M-Clone shares just before the FDA announced it would not review the company's new cancer drug, causing the stock to nosedive. Jim Shenaby, CBS News.
News Radio 1180 WHAM.
There was only one place to get the information I needed.
Rochester's place to talk.
Here's WHAM's radar weather for Rochester and Western New York. Partly to mostly cloudy, mild and breezy for the overnight. The low 63 to 68. Could be a quick spotty shower on the west side. And then during the day on Wednesday, still on the warm, breezy side, clouds will limit the sun, though. There'll be a period of showers, even a thunderstorm in spots. Wednesday's high 75 to 80. Thursday, noticeably cooler and breezy with morning gray skies breaking for sunshine. Thursday's high 63 to 68. This is WHAM's Kevin Williams.
The NFL season is back.
Has time. Guns the middle of the end zone. Cup by Terrell on the post. Touchdown.
And if you think you've got game, test your skills online. Log on to wham1180.com every week this football season. Make your picks and win great prizes.
Look at him go. Head by touchdown. Fred Taylor sticks the knife in Kansas City.
The Wham Online Pigskin Pick'em. Brought to you by Quality Home Funding Corporation. Log on and play today at wham1180.com.